I'm Ryan Lambert from Elite Prospects.
I'm Sean McAdoo from The Athletic.
And what do you guys want to talk about this week? You think anything's going on that maybe someone on this podcast has very strong feelings about?
I'm assuming you're referring to the bean pot.
Pretty good. Good stuff.
What was the name of the guy who scored the winning goal?
Gunnar Wolf Fontaine.
Dude.
Yeah.
That ain't real.
Yeah. And great news, he's a Nashville Predators prospect.
Fantastic.
How about this, though? Gunnar Wolf Fontaine scores the overtime game winner last night. Scored the overtime game winner in game one last week. Last year in the Beanpot Final, scored both of Northeastern's goals en route to a shootout win. Big game player.
Sounds to me like what you're saying is that he is clutch.
Mm-hmm. Destined to make the NHL, of course. Everybody understands that. If you score a big goal, your future is the NHL. He's a very good college hockey player. Very dangerous scorer, as the track record from the Beanpot alone kind of implies. Really fun tournament. Both games were good. Both Northeastern games were good, and one BU game was good, but the BC-Harvard game yesterday went about as well as you would expect a BC-Harvard game to go. 5-0 shots were like 39-19 or something like that. Can't win them all. They can't all be good. And in fact, in the Beanpot, they're often not all good at all. So, very fun championship game last night. So, can't complain. We got to talk about the Morgan Riley, Ridley Gregg thing. So, Sean, the floor is yours.
Well, I guess that we have to start by just offering our thoughts and prayers to Ridley Gregg as he continues to recover from the career-ending injury that he said. The assassination of Ridley Gregg by the coward Morgan Riley, which caused him to plummet to the ice and be attended to by a trainer. I'm told he practiced yesterday and he's completely fine, so...
Thing is, no one's ever been hit in the face with a hockey stick and it hurt in the moment, and then
We know when hockey players, when something hurts for a moment, you drop to the ice until the trainers come out. A-plus by the Senators trainers, because that's the second time this year that they've had a guy die on the ice from a cross check and not miss a shift. So they've really figured out whatever the secret is here. I tell you what, nobody wants to hear, people want to hear me, but they're just going to get mad at me. I want to hear your view on this.
You set
the bar. I want to hear this.
Okay. Who gives a shit?
Okay.
If this isn't on the national game in Canada, and look, we're going to get into a lot of these, if X didn't happen, then why? Because I saw you saying on Twitter the other day, if it wasn't retaliatory, and it's like, yeah, I guess that's true.
That was in response to somebody who was saying, they were basically saying, well, if you take the retaliation out of it, that was it. They said, I said it should be a 3 or 4 game suspension. They said, well, yeah, but then you got to factor in that it was retaliatory. And I said, if it wasn't retaliatory, then it's a 2-minute penalty. The 3 to 4 games is completely for the retaliation, after the play aspect. If that happened during the play, plays like that happen 10 times a game during
the play. I wouldn't go that far. I don't think guys get cross-checked in the face and it's only a 2-minute penalty.
They do. They along the board, if the puck was there, and again, this isn't, obviously it wasn't, and that's why the fact that it was after the play and retaliation, everyone acknowledges that's what makes this a special case. Guys get a cross-check to the shoulder that rides up and gets them in the head or the face area all the time, and it's 2 minutes. Maybe not 10 times a game, but that's a 2-minute penalty. That causes no injury. That's a 2-minute penalty if it happens in the run of play, which it didn't. So that's the part. But that was the point I was making to the guy, that the action itself minus the retaliation, you don't add something to the suspension. The suspension is because of retaliation. That's the only reason that we're talking about it at all.
Yeah, that to me who anybody saying that kind of thing. It's like, yeah, man, if I hadn't been drunk, they wouldn't arrested me. Wouldn't have arrested me for driving. True.
Yep.
That's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so to me, I think that, you know, if this happens in like a San Jose Anaheim game, everything exactly about it is exactly the same, except we're not talking about it on the fucking podcast. We're sitting here and you're going, oh yeah, 3 or 4 games, no problem. And I'm going, oh, I'd even go longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And then the Department of Player Safety would come back and say it was one game. And we'd all go,
I mean,
we'd complain about it. And then we'd have forgotten about it the next day.
For sure. Yeah, that is kind of undeniable to me, is that this is, if it weren't a Maple Leafs game that were the Hockey Night in Canada main game, there would be almost nothing to say about this. That's my main thing. The idea that, like, again, I've seen you saying, like, well, look, I mean, you know, this is a big deal because it's the Leafs. No, it was a big deal because I think it was on national TV. I think that if this was, you know, a Bruins Rangers game on TNT or ESPN, we're getting the same thing, because
you're getting a lot of it.
There's more eyes on it.
I mean, I know that there's a lot of people out there that are rolling their eyes at that. But you can't have it both ways. You can't complain constantly the way so many fans do that the Leafs get so much attention. And then when something happens and people go, yeah, this is the Leafs getting attention again, go, oh, no, that's not a thing. Like, pick a lane, man. Like, my mentions are filled with anytime we talk anything with the Leafs, people complain, oh, it's just because of the Leafs that you're making a big deal out of this. But when it's offered up as something that could be viewed as a potential defense, suddenly it's not a real thing.
Well,
get out of here.
Okay, let me say this about, they're talking about the Leafs again. Say what you fucking want about them. They are a compelling team. And, you know, if they were just some random team that's in a wild card spot, you know, the Kings are kind of in the same spot in the standings as them. Obviously, the Leafs are having a better season overall, but maybe not as... Yeah, you know, I'm looking at the standings now. The Leafs are 2 points up, but they played an extra game on the Kings. So, but didn't we just spend a couple of weeks talking about, isn't it fucking weird what the Kings are doing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, I would say the issue with that is, most people are more casual about how they intake their hockey information than like me and you. Goes without saying. It's our job versus it's not most people's jobs.
Yeah.
Right. And again, the Leafs are a compelling team because of like the pressure that they've put on themselves with how they performed in the playoffs. Right. And they are
compelling, but even if they weren't, they have a massive fan base. Which, by the way, is completely unearned. It's geography and history. That's all it is. But it is the reality.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is like, you know, back when NHL on NBC or whatever had the package, it was just like, the national game this week is some combination of the Rangers, the Flyers, the Penguins, the Bruins, and the Capitals. Maybe the Red Wings might mix Chicago in there every once in a while. And you would just be like, I don't fuck. Can I watch any other fucking team on the national game, please?
Yeah.
And it definitely is that. Like, you know, the number of times in the season the Leafs are the 7 o'clock Hockey Night in Canada game. I get all that, but also it's the biggest city in Canada. I get that as well. Mm-hmm. But like I say, to me, this is a fucking open and shut case. 3 to 4 games. Looks like they're going to give them more than that. But earlier this year, they cracked down on David Perron for a retaliatory cross check.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, that seems like the standard they're going with now.
Yeah.
Which I'm all in favor of.
And I am too. And I know that anything I say on Morgan Riley, people are going to go dig up whatever I said on David Perron, you know, all this other stuff. And look, it is. If that's the new standard, great. and this is the standard going forward, and that cross checks after the play is dead are six games and not one game like they were when somebody did it to the Leafs 3 years ago, which everyone has seen that clip going around, the Alex Shea song. I would simply say David Perron took two strides directly at someone to get at top speed and cross-check them directly in the neck and face area. Whereas Morgan Riley skated towards a guy, glided at him, hit him in the shoulder, and it bounced up into the face. And you're responsible for your stick. But as, you know, Elliot Friedman had a good piece today where he was like, look, the Department of Player Safety has always considered that a factor when it comes to a stick. Did you directly stick the guy, or did the stick, you know, was it going somewhere else and it bounced up? Not that it lets you off the hook, but it does change the severity of it. So in theory, David Perron should be the absolute ceiling on this play. But we got to talk about the elephant in the room. And I, again, people are going to be rolling their eyes. People will turn this off, yell at us, all this stuff. The Toronto
I'm with you guys.
Toronto Maple Leafs are the most suspended team in the league under George Parros. The super soft, never go into the corners, never do anything, wimpy Maple Leafs are the most suspended team and also the team that has the least number of suspensions against them. One game total ever from George Parros, and that was for a guy after a game was over skating up to someone and cross-checking them in the face. Fairly similar to what Morgan Riley is about to get six-plus games for. I'm sorry if people think it makes me a homer to point out that that is messed up and that something is going on here.
So, okay. So in your conception of this, is it what, the like 80 games George Parros played for the Habs or something? Like, no. Why on? Like,
it is. It has nothing to do with George Parros. It has nothing to do with Brendan Shanahan used to have the job. I think that the Department of Player Safety is far more sensitive than they let on to public perception. I think they are terrified of being accused of a pro-Toronto, pro-big market bias. And I think they are bending over so far backwards to show that they have no pro-Toronto bias that they can now see the ground behind their feet. They have gone completely overboard as far as anything borderline that happens against the Leafs, no suspension. Anything borderline that happens with the Leafs gets either a suspension or, in a case like this, where everybody agrees a suspension is warranted, gets more games than it may be otherwise would. They will always err on the side, or they always seem to err on the side of an extra game the other way against, or I guess in the direction of what would not get them accused of being biased towards Toronto. I think that's a human nature explanation. I'm not assigning malice. I'm not going conspiracies. I just think they are very...
Sure you are.
No, that's it. There's no conspiracy there. That's just human nature. It's human nature the same as, you know what, in all sports, home teams tend to get a few more calls because when it comes to a borderline, the ref tends to, you know, they would never tell you that they factor in the crowd. But in this case, the crowd that the Department of Player Safety seems really interested in is whatever that combination of whether it's fans, whether it's media, whether it's the other GMs know that they can, you know, go to them. I think they are sensitive to the criticism that they have been hearing over and over and over again for years, and hammering the biggest market team that gets the most attention whenever the opportunity arises is a great way for them to avoid some of that criticism. And if they can do it in a way that makes sure that nobody would ever say they have a bias, which God knows people love to say when it comes to the Leafs, I think they have maybe even unwittingly fallen into a trap where this is a thing. Or maybe not, and it's just a crazy coincidence that the softest team in the league takes not just the most suspensions, but an extra, you know, to the point where the only time in the last 5 years that Gary Bettman has had to step in and reduce a suspension was a Leaf player. Like, even Gary Bettman had to be like, George, settle down. It's Jason Spezza.
Is that true that it's the last 5 years? Because I remember,
Tom Wilson was the one before that. Tom Wilson went from 20 games to 14, and that was like 2016, 15, something like that.
Oh, that was that long ago. It was a long time. Man, I am old as hell. Yep. Anyway, so here's the thing I would say is, you're like, oh, suspended, the most suspended team. When they get suspended, they get the most games, whatever. I guess my thing is, like, by the logic you're saying, shouldn't like the Rangers be like number two on that list? And Jacob Trouba could take out a bazooka and shoot someone at center ice, and they'd just be like, $5,000 fine.
And I'll give you the answer for that. And I mean, you tell me, you're down in the States. Do half the hockey fans in the States spend all their time complaining about pro Rangers bias and how everything is tilted for the Rangers and Rangers this and Rangers that? Or are the Rangers a big market team, but, you know, kind of still another team? Because I can tell you up here,
I think it's kind of,
I can tell you up here, every time there's a video review that goes the Leafs' way, we have to have a national conversation about how the league is, you know, because the war room is in Toronto, that's why all the calls go their way.
I will say the war room maybe should be in, like, Des Moines. You know what I mean? Like, let's just not even enter into, like, that perception of bias. But again, like, the reason it's a national conversation is, like, 82% of the hockey media in Canada is at every Leafs game and just like, you know who's pretty good? It's the fucking Leafs. It's like, yeah, that's the only team you see. Shut the fuck up, you know?
I don't know what to tell you, man. Like, Toronto's a big city.
It's one of three big cities in the entire country. I understand all that.
I guess,
you know,
yeah, Sportsnet is not headquartered in Winnipeg. I don't know what to tell you. But anyways, I just, again, it's maybe the Leafs are just way dirtier than every other team, though they're soft. Every team comes in to play the Leafs, sees how soft they are, and says, we don't ever have to do anything against them that's suspension worthy, even though every Leaf fan can find you 10 clips of stuff that looks as bad as Morgan Rielly that got a fat up, including, by the way, a few days ago when a Leafs player got his face busted open by a headshot and there was no penalty on the play and it was a fine from the league. I mean, it's maybe it's just coincidence, or maybe they really are just getting this stuff right.
But was it retaliatory after the whistle and all that? I don't know what clip you're talking about. I straight up don't know.
It's the Mason Marchment hit on Jake McCabe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess I do know.
I mean, that was a nasty hit, and the Department of Player Safety agreed, but they made it a fine.
Let me ask you this, right? Like, okay, again, we're saying, oh, it's the Leafs are soft. First of all, you know who says that shit is like the people when I used to go to Bruins games and they would go, look at you fucking soft out there, hit somebody. You know what I mean? Like, stupid people say that. Sure.
Well, you know what? Honestly, even as a Leaf fan, I don't think it's unfair to say that this Leafs team is not a physical team, have not been for years. And around the edges, they love to get guys like Ryan Reeves, Wayne Simmonds. But those aren't the guys getting suspended. Kyle Clifford did in the playoff. But, I mean, it's Jason Spezza, Austin Matthews, Morgan, like, these are Lady Bing candidates.
Well, I think that seems to be a game or two higher than anyone else seems to get. I think that's more weird, of a Paros lets Jacob Trouba get away with murder kind of a thing to me.
Maybe. Sure.
But the other thing,
so is
I
that a conspiracy,
say,
or is that just George Paros and his people have certain preferences and certain biases?
I think it falls into the latter category.
Right. Bias is not a conspiracy. It can just be human bias.
The other thing I want to say, though, is to the perception of softness. I think that, like, Morgan Rielly doing this, it's fucking downy soft, baby. You go wipe a baby's ass with this fucking play, in my opinion. You know what I mean? Because it's like, Yeah, you're mad about he did a slap shot into the net.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking cry about it. You know what I mean? Like, on it, like, because that to me, I get so, like, I criticize players for whining about, like, the code and all this shit. Well, don't give up the fucking empty netter, big dog. I don't know. Like, yeah. To me.
But there is a line. Like, there has to be. And I've said it when it comes to what Ridly Gregg did. I didn't have a big problem with it. It was a minor. I think the way I wrote about it on Monday is he put a little dab of mustard on the hot dog. That's it. This is where I feel like I break for certainly the majority of Leaf fans, but even maybe the majority of fans, period, in that I didn't see that as some great sin. Now, that having been said, you do that.
Yeah, you're going to get frowned at for sure.
This whole, like, is an unsuspecting player. He never, you know, Ridly Gregg had, like, come on. Ridly Gregg knew somebody was coming over. Now, he probably didn't expect to get cross-checked in the head or whatever, but this idea or shoved in the shoulder or whatever it was. But, I mean, the idea this was Pierre Turgeon all over again is just, like, there are people out there, and look, I don't dispute, there are some very, very dumb Leaf fans out there. No questions. I encounter a whole lot of them. But listen, man. There are some people on the other side that have lost their minds over this. I mean, I got people in my comment section posting 20 comments. I got a guy saying it's one of the 3 to 5 worst plays in modern hockey history.
Wait people a minute. You're saying Senators lost. Fans are going over the top about their reaction
I don't think
to
it's
literally
Senators
anything?
Fans, to be honest with you, I think it's fans of some other, you know, because it's always like, I don't have a dog in this fight. But, and then you look at their other comments and, like, they comment on every Leafs article about how much they don't like the Leafs. It's like, yeah, you're okay. Very unbiased. Sure. I didn't have a big problem with what Ridly Gregg did. But I also thought Morgan Riley going over, like, if he goes over and just kind of shoves him into the boards and says, like, knock it off, kid. No big deal. Now, he didn't do that. He's responsible for it. And again, nobody's, you know, are you saying it's okay? No, nobody's saying that. Everyone's saying he should get suspended. But I did, like, did you read the Friedman piece that went up this morning?
I had time to read a big chunk of it, but not the whole thing.
It's interesting stuff. There's good facts. And the thing about Elliot, if you read his stuff, he is always he chooses his words very carefully. And, you know, I don't want to do that, that thing where somebody takes Elliot's words and repackages them as something much more extreme, but he certainly seems to suggest in the article that there is very widespread feeling in the hockey world that an in-person hearing for this is crazy, that people were very, very surprised.
Yes. Again, I think that boils down to, for the most part, the NHL just goes, 2-game suspension.
Right.
Whatever it is. I didn't even look at the video. It's a 2-game suspension. You say it's a suspendable hit? 2 games? See you later.
And that's what we're saying. That sure does seem to happen.
But,
for 31
again,
teams.
The Perron thing is, to me, the kind of the X factor. And you can say, well, this particular retaliatory cross-check is very different from the other particular. And it's like, okay, sure, is that worth a game, 2 games? I don't know what the answer is. And obviously, we're recording this on a Tuesday instead of our normal Wednesday, which, by the way, Tuesday is going to be the normal day going forward. If we were recording this tomorrow, we probably know what the answer to all this is, and there's a lot more to talk about. Now we have to deal with hypotheticals.
Except that we won't, because they're going to give them almost certainly 6 games. And then the Leafs will appeal. And then who knows? And the reason I say almost certainly is because they almost always know the number before they even do the hearing. And then maybe you can move it. I think Elliot found 2 cases ever where they've done an in-person hearing and had it come in less than 6 games.
Yes, correct. One of them was 4 and one of them was 5, I believe.
Yeah. So,
and again, I feel like either of those numbers is, like, appropriate. I'm not even mad about 6. I cannot be mad about 6.
Yeah. And 6, in theory, should be the absolute ceiling. I think there is a part of me that wouldn't even be shocked if they went seven, because only because the Department of Player Safety, like so much of the NHL, and this is something that is team, not team specific at all, but they seem to have a very strong, you can't tell me what to do vibe. That sure. when, you yeah. know, when I there's a big that. Public push in one direction, they go, you know what, we're going to go the other way because you don't, you're not the boss of me. I think there is a non-zero chance that it comes in actually lower than six, only because I've heard and seen so many references to like how many people around the league think this is nuts. And I wonder if like at some point, like those guys are in group chats too.
Yeah,
and at some point, you know, like the how many GMs have reached out to George Barris and just been like, dude, come on. Like, you know.
They don't like big suspensions, period. Like that is like undeniable, is that GMs want their guys protected, but in the broad sense, like if you showed a GM and like could somehow edit out like faces and logos and all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff, if you showed a GM every single suspendable play, they would go, should be 80 games. That's crazy. And then you, again, were somehow to like edit their player's face and like logo onto the guy getting fouled or whatever you want to say. They would mm-hmm. go, or the guy doing the fouling, sorry. They would go, well, that should be one game max. Like that's how it is. We'll wrap it up with this. We've gone on about this too long. We'll wrap it up with this. Sean, remember earlier this year you were just like, I'm fucking sick of these Leafs. Let's just get it over with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
From an accelerationist point of view, you should want this to be like a 12-game suspension. Because this team without Morgan Rielly is probably in the toilet. They're already not really in a playoff race, quite frankly. Like, you know, they are more... you know, sliding down, obviously the game's in hand, but with this team in particular, you're just like, I mean, the game's in hand, who knows? So to me, you should be like, you know what would be great is if this team missed the playoffs. Sheldon Keefe gets fired, a couple of these bums.
Here's the counterpoint.
Yeah.
If he gets suspended six games and they lose all six games and they miss the playoffs, there's your built-in excuse.
Well, sure.
There's your built-in, you know, we can't fire Sheldon Keefe because his best defenseman got unfairly suspended by the biased Department of Player Safety. We can't expect Brad Treliving to make big changes to the roster. Yeah. This was a playoff team before dastardly George Parros.
I see. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So
anyway, it's accelerated, but it does give them one less excuse for when they, you know, start like 7-8-3 next year, you know?
Maybe. I my final saying on this is, and I tweeted something to this effect, I feel the same way about these suspensions as I do about superstar contracts. I think all the numbers should be bigger than they are. I just find it a little weird and annoying that the numbers are always big for my favorite team and nowhere else. They're two completely unrelated things, but I have the same feeling about it. Like, you know, how can you complain about William Nylander getting so much money? Don't you want stars to get money? Yeah, I do. And if all the stars get money, great. That's how it should work. Same thing. You want to give Morgan Rielly six and, you know, Jason Spezza six and everything. Cool. Give everyone suspensions like that. I'm 100% on board. But when it seems to happen with one team and one team only, it's a pattern worth noting one way or another.
The problem
doesn't
is,
make you a homer to point it out.
I mean, the problem is that you did say my favorite team, and that's when you start working at Springfield Nuclear Power Plant,
dude,
my friend.
When your kids are
Bart, Lisa, and Maggie.
What do you want me to do? Sit here and pretend that I'm not a Leafs fan when everyone knows that? And you know, would you say this if it was a different team? Yeah, if you show me some other team is leading the league in suspensions and is also leading the league at the other end of the chart of fewest suspensions. And that team doesn't have any sort of rep, you know, they don't take a lot of penalties. It's not like they're out here getting a bunch of majors in it. Yes, I 100% guarantee you I will say the same thing I'm saying for the Leafs, which is, that's weird. There's probably something going on here. I promise you.
I'll leave you with this. If Ryan Reeves was out there, this shit wouldn't have happened. You know?
Yep.
We all agree with that.
By the way, one final thing. It was very, very funny when, with 5 seconds left, the Leafs put Ryan Reeves on the ice because you don't know who the Senators are going to put out, and Brady Tkachuk, stapled to the bench, stands up and starts screaming, "Let me out there. Well, let me out there. I got to get Ryan Reeves."
We've talked about that with Brady Tkachuk before. Where
buddy,
it's like,
buddy, I don't know.
He gets real tough when the Senators are down 3-1.
I know it's a Leafs
3-1.
Game, and it's hard to tell, but the game is in Ottawa. You are the home team. You do have last change.
Yeah.
But talk to your coach, man. He can send you out there right now. We can make this happen.
Yeah, unfortunately, they fired the coach that just doesn't really seem like he was paying much attention.
Yeah, that's true. Unfortunate.
Okay, well, you know what? All that having been said, God, we did a half an hour on that. That makes me sick to my stomach. Why don't we take a break? We'll be right back. This week's episode of Puck Soup is brought to you by ExpressVPN. And folks, you probably know what a VPN is. It's a way to browse the internet and increase your privacy at the exact same time. A good analogy for it, I guess, is like if you're using the internet without a VPN, it's like driving around without car insurance because you're just taking an unnecessary risk. So why would you do that? That's where ExpressVPN comes in. You're out there, you got your little device, your laptop, your tablet, your phone, and you're connecting to all kinds of networks, coffee shops and hotels and airports and restaurants, on and on and on. And if you're on an unencrypted network, any hacker on the same network can gain access to your personal data, that, you know, financial information, passwords, etc. And this is the thing. I say hackers. It doesn't really take a lot of technical knowledge to do it. It says here, just some cheap hardware. A smart 12-year-old can do it. And hackers can make up to $1,000 per person selling your personal info on the dark web. That's all bad. You would agree, I think. So that's where ExpressVPN comes in. They act as a kind of online insurance a little bit because it creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet, meaning hackers can't steal your data. It's super secure. It'd take a hacker with a supercomputer over 1 billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. I don't know if that's like literally true, but even if it's like kind of true, it's a good layer of protection. It's super simple. You fire up the app. You click one button and you're protected. It works on all devices, phones, laptops, tablets, and more. So you can stay secure on the go. I mentioned, obviously, earlier, like the, you know, coffee shops and that kind of thing. I work from home most of the time. So where I use ExpressVPN is like at college hockey games or NHL games or whatever, where you're connecting to a broad Wi-Fi network where a lot of people have the password. And just it's a little, not that I think any hockey writers are hacking me or anything like that, although if they try it, they're in a lot of trouble. But it's just that extra layer of security, very helpful, you know, just gives you a little extra peace of mind. So here's what you're going to want to do. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/puck. That's expressvpn.com/puck. You can get an extra 3 months for free. That's expressvpn.com/puck. All right, we're back, and I want to talk now about a team I wrote about this weekend. So, you know, this makes me feel so smart. I can just cite stats at you, kind of sight unseen or whatever. But I wrote about the Penguins this weekend because it seems like, and this is kind of a common theme across a few divisions or teams this week. It seems like the locals are just like, we're fully fucking done with these guys. They got nothing going on. And, it's because they lost to Minnesota and Winnipeg in back-to-back road games.
Yep.
But how they did it, like, they just kind of didn't seem like they were ever really in those games. Yeah.
One-goal games. Like, it wasn't. They didn't get blown out, but
yeah, and they outshot the opponent in both of those games. But like, you know, just from I only watched part of the Winnipeg game, so I wasn't able to watch the Minnesota game. But the locals are just kind of, you know, how people in Toronto have talked about the Leafs, where it's like, they just don't feel like anything's happened. Like, this feels like a lifeless good team. Mm-hmm. And, like, good isn't good enough for these guys.
But I guess with the difference being that with some of these other teams, you kind of look at it and go, well, if this isn't the year, well, maybe next year will be better. Whereas Pittsburgh, the age of that core, like, I can't imagine. This is what they are now, how's it getting better?
That's what makes them interesting, yeah, right? Look, you know, obviously they lost their last two games, but they are 2-4-1 in their last seven, and one of those games was an overtime win against Montreal. Right? Mm-hmm. So you're just like, fuck, man, that is bad. I say this a lot, especially in a league with like with so many 3-point games and stuff like that. Winning in regulation, even if you're not giving away, like, you know, giving away a point or two to like the Winnipeg Jets in overtime, that doesn't matter if you're the Penguins, right? In theory. But in actual practice, it's like you really do need to be winning games in overtime as a general rule. Or in regulation, I mean, as a general rule. And I don't know, the Penguins don't seem particularly good at doing that lately. You got to go back to the end of December to find multiple games the Penguins won in regulation in a row.
Yikes.
Yep. And yeah, in the month, from the start of the month of January, they're 5-6-3. That, I mean, it's not good, right? And so it does kind of, so I guess my point is, it does kind of feel like they're not, they don't have the juice to make the playoffs this year. They have the talent to rip off 5-6 wins in a row.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't feel like they're going to fucking do it.
Yep. And that's disastrous for this team, given the fact that they're doing this with Sidney Crosby in MVP mode. They're doing this with Erik Karlsson, who they went and traded for, and by the way, owe him $10 million for 3 more years after this one. They're doing this with, obviously, Letang and Malkin, who they extended, keep the band together. And they're doing it with Tristan Jarry being pretty good.
That is the critical. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Jarry has been pretty good for most of this season, and this is where they are in the standings, right? Like, it's the Jussi Saros thing. But it's, I would say, in all fairness to Tristan Jarry, not as repeatable feeling as Jussi Saros standing on his head for an entire season behind an OK team.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this. What do you think the Penguins should do? Not will do, should do.
Yeah. I think that what they should do in the short term is I think you trade Jake Guentzel. I think that's that, and that's the other piece that's so interesting here is with a lot of these teams, the kind of, you know, what do you do decision is sort of vague and fuzzy and conceptual. Whereas here, they've got a very concrete decision to make in the next couple of weeks. Because you've got a good player, a guy who, in theory, right now, could be the best player that would be out on the trade market.
I would say that's definitely true now that Lindholm is out of the – and we'll talk about that whole thing in a bit, too.
So you can go and trade him, or you re-sign him, which means throwing another – 5, 6, 7, 8 years at another guy on who's going to be on the wrong side of 30
Jake Guentzel will be 30 when next season starts.
So
early October birthday.
And I, you know, it's interesting to me because I said, like, Rob Rossi wrote a piece where he said they should trade him. And I was surprised at the number of comments from Penguins fans that were disagreeing with that. Saying no, keep him, like, you know, don't. And part of it is, look, if you trade him, even if he is the number one name on the trade board, even if you can get a bidding war going. Like, what are you going to get? You're going to get a prospect. You're going to get a number one pick that's going to be in the 20s, probably, in not a crazy strong draft. So that's a guy that, you know, you're going to see that guy in 3 years. It doesn't help you next year. It makes you worse next year, which kind of, when you look at this team where they are now, means you're missing the playoffs next year. But I would trade him. I would restock the cupboard. That's the other piece of this. The prospect cupboard is not bare because it never is for any team, but it's not good in Pittsburgh. They've stripped a lot of it. I'd trade him. I throw in the towel on the season. I make that what I would consider a tough decision because, man, it's got to be tempting to say, well, I mean, not only has it got to be tempting to say, hey, we win three in a row, we're in good shape here. I mean, if you're Kyle Dubas or whoever, like, how do you look Sidney Crosby in the eye and go, we're quitting on this year? But I would. Now, I have a feeling I know what you would do.
I'm right. So what they should do is trade him and Lars Eller, who is signed for next year, but at a relatively minimal cap hit. And I think, you know, I mentioned this earlier, if he has some, like if Nick Dowd is getting first round pick talk, I'm like, and Lars Eller, of course, is the older Nick Dowd, right? Like Nick Dowd's a good player. The sticker shock on he's worth a first round pick is obviously there. Mm-hmm. But the issue is that Nick Dowd is signed for next year at like $1.8 million or something like that. And that in this cap world, even, I don't know if you heard the cap's going up.
Oh, yeah.
Even in that scenario, like a good depth center like him for $1.8 million, that's worth quite a bit, I would say. And so, you know, you might not be able to get a first, but could you get something pretty good for Lars Eller, a guy that you shouldn't really have any long-term attachment to? Yeah, I would say so. But this is the problem for the Penguins. I'm looking at their cap-friendly page. The number of times I see the three letters NMC or NTC mm-hmm. on their page, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. They only let you put 20 guys on the ice in a game. So the fact that 13 guys are in some way in control of where they get sent, that to me is bad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about your feelings on this, but
that does seem bad. Now, again, no trade doesn't mean can't trade. And, you know, I imagine that, I mean, if you go to Jake Guentzel and say, we want to send you to a contender, go play 20 playoff games, score 10 big playoff goals before you hit the open market, is he going to refuse?
No, yeah. But again, like he might have a preference of like, I don't want to go to Winnipeg, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
It's 12 teams for Guentzel that he can say no to.
Yep.
And maybe he waves and maybe he doesn't, but you know, it's a little tricky. It's a little tricky. And this is the real problem for the Penguins. Is how do you, after you went out and traded for Erik Karlsson, and you traded for Riley Smith, and you re-signed Evgeny Malkin, and you re-signed Chris Letang, say to Sidney Crosby, who demanded that you do at least the latter two things, and, you know, maybe had a hand in being like, maybe we should go get Erik Karlsson too, you know? I don't know. But it's been reported that, like, Crosby spent months, apparently, or over the course of a few months, I don't know, however you want to phrase it, but well in advance of Malkin and Letang becoming free agents, Crosby was like, what are we doing? We got to re-sign these guys. And then they did it. And was it the smartest move to give them a combined $12.2 million? I would say probably not at their age.
Yeah. And again, Man, I'm the last person who has any expertise in this, but if I had a core that had won 3 Stanley Cups, I'd find it pretty tough to break that up. But in this case, I'd try to squeeze every drop out of the stone. But at this point, yeah. I think maybe there's no more drops. Now, that being said, these guys are still, I believe, favorited to make the playoffs in, like, we might be going more doom and gloom here than is warranted. Yeah. Now, make the playoffs. Are they
that? That is the critical.
Down to 60% in Dom's model,
and it's 47.1 from MoneyPuck. So,
60% to make the playoffs, 29% to win a round. But again, you know,
that's not nothing.
Yeah, that's not nothing, and it's not. And obviously, those numbers go down if you move a Jake Guentzel. Or
for sure
the
they do. That's kind of why I'm so fascinated by them. They have guys they could move.
I do think you can. This is certainly a case where maybe you take as much time as you can until the deadline. We're still 3.5 weeks away. A lot can happen in those games. So I mean,
they're 500 in the last 6 weeks, man, or below 500.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the tough thing, I would say. So yeah, I'm just I look at it and I say to myself, this is a this is a real tough thing, because again, you're like, oh, the risk right now is that Sidney Crosby misses the playoffs 2 straight years for the first time in his career. The Penguins missed the playoffs when he was a rookie. They missed the playoffs last year. Every other year of his career, he's been in the postseason. At least, you know, one round. And often more than that. Mm-hmm. And in trading Jake Guentzel, you're essentially going, well, Sid, we'll go get him next year when you're 37 and Evgeny Malkin's 38, you know? That's a really tough sell. I don't know what the answer is. I will also say...
Because that's the thing, right? I mean, is the answer that you just spend the last who knows how many years of Sidney Crosby's career, and the way he's going this year, I mean, it could be another 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Do you just spend that time spinning your wheels? Do you think you could rebuild / reload, whatever you want to call it, in time to get him back there? Do you double down?
Well, crucially, the other aspect.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
You say it, because you'll get yelled at, not me.
Crosby's a free agent in summer 2025. Just saying. Just putting it out there.
You know, I don't know.
He is. It feels
impossible to imagine.
But, and yet, people have been kind of...
You want to talk about a rebuild. You want to talk about, casting. Boy, you get a lot for Jake Guentzel. And you know, we're not talking deadline here, but move Sidney Crosby at the draft. Ooh, boy.
Imagine the balls it would take to trade. It would never happen. But the balls it would take to trade Sidney Crosby is like incalculable.
You would have to be, you could do that if you were like, you'd been the GM there for 10, 15 years. Like a Lou Lamoriello in New Jersey could have done something like that. But Kyle Dubas coming in 1 year, taking one swing at it. Oh, we missed the playoffs. I'm going to tear the whole thing down.
I mean, that's so sick, man.
This is not even, you know, obviously this isn't even a GM decision.
No, absolutely not.
This is the whole, I can't imagine it. But you got to at least put it out there. If we're listing all the options, moving on from the core is an option. But
for sure it is, yeah. But
I just can't. Yeah. I can't
no, I don't. Again, you don't re-sign Malkin and Letang if... the possibility of trading Sidney Crosby is even remotely on your radar, right? Like, it just, come on. All right, let's move on from the peg. Oh no, one last thing. You think there's a point where they fire the coach? Just as a means of
every
doing something?
Every time I mention that, Penguin fans tell me no chance. They tell me he's got, you know, a bunch of years, bunch of money left. That
he does.
That it's not an option. I'd say yes, it's possible. The amount of turnover we've seen from coaches in the last while is crazy. And let's remember the history in Pittsburgh: two Stanley Cups that they've won with a midseason coaching change, although earlier than this. I don't think the chances are zero, but I've been constantly told the chances are always lower than I seem to think they are.
Yeah, and also I think there's a very good argument. Kyle Dubas is a smart guy. He can't be looking at this team going, I can't believe Mike Sullivan isn't getting more out of this group. You know what I mean? Like, that's just kind of my thing about it. Mike Sullivan, by the way, inducted into the Beanpot Hall of Fame last night. I saw him walking around TD Garden.
Good for him.
Yep. And, so that's it on the Penguins, I guess. Another team that is in hell right now, and I saw the headline over the weekend. And I loved the headline. I don't have it in front of me. I should have pulled it up. But it was basically like, the Sabres are boring or bad and boring. The worst kind of thing you can be, basically. And it's true. It's undeniable. Try watching a Sabres game this year. It's a miserable experience. So, I don't know. Your thoughts on the Buffalo Sabres?
Yeah, so I wrote about them this week. In my weekly rankings, where I kind of every now and then I do this, where I just sort of say like, "Hey, here's where things are at. Where are you at, fans? Like, yeah. Sabres fans, help me out here because I look at this team. Clearly, this was not anywhere close to the plan. The results this year, this was much like Ottawa. This was supposed to be the year they were at least in the mix." And instead, they're looking at another 3 months of meaningless hockey. The Don Granato situation to me is very interesting because I think I rewrote the line in my column about four times over the weekend where I went from he's obviously getting fired to he's probably getting fired to he's maybe getting fired. And then I think I got back to probably, but I'm seeing a lot of stuff saying that, you know, he's going to stay, but they're going to gut the whole staff around him and he'll bring in all new people. I don't know,
okay,
man. It's a very unfair thing about sports, but it is a fact that there's a long history of coaches who get brought in and do a great job in the first stage of the rebuild. And then they hand the torch off to some other coach who takes the team into the playoffs and into contention.
Yeah. So
is that what this is?
I would say part of the issue for me is that there's a real strong perception that he did a lot of good stuff last year, right? One of the things that I think it's kind of indisputable he did, if you look at the numbers, was tell them to shoot 11%.
Yeah.
Again, I think that's just kind of indisputable. That's what they did last year, and it got them to 42 wins, but crucially, not in the playoffs, were they? You know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think their quality last year was overstated. I think it's easy to be a team that, like, you know, I talk about this a lot with the Columbus Blue Jackets of years past, where it's like, well, look at what they did after the All-Star break. It's like, right, when they played nothing but backup goalies for 3 months straight. Sounds good, you know? Tage Thompson shot 16% last year. Alex Tuch shot 16.5% last year. Jeff Skinner shot 14.5% last year. You know, I don't think Dylan Cousins shot almost 15%. Victor Olofsson shot 17%. I don't think it takes a genius to go, maybe, just maybe, last year's Sabres overperformed. I think that what happens when you say that is a lot of people say, well, look how young they are. You know, Owen Power, Rasmus Dahlin. A big part of the Sabres problem is they got two very good defensemen first overall in the draft, and having two very good defensemen is a good good situation, obviously. But you know what would have been really nice is like a number one center.
Yeah.
You know?
And we thought that one had kind of fallen out of the sky for them in Tage Thompson. And
yeah. But turns out when he doesn't shoot 17% or whatever, and he's at almost 11 this year. So, like, you know, but when he doesn't, when he doesn't shoot 15%+, which he did the previous 2 years, you know, it's a little harder to say what's going on with him.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little bit. And, you know, I don't think he's been as bad this year as the numbers perhaps suggest. And certainly he's not been productive. He's only got 15 goals this year, right? But he's on pace for 30. If he had played all their games, which he didn't, obviously, and maybe the injury is a factor, I don't know. But to me, I just look at this team and I go, I mean, what did you expect, man? They did the dumb guy thing too, I think you could say, of like, you know what, let's try to go out there and get a couple of mediocre veterans and maybe that'll get us over the line. And that does not work 90% of the time. It seems like it's working for Detroit. But
yeah. Well, but here's the other thing with Buffalo is they were one of those teams in the summer we all looked at and said they need a goalie. Now, their situation was trickier than New Jersey or some others because they had Devon Levy ready to go, and who knows?
Yeah, everything hinged on whether he was good.
You don't. Well, everything hinged once they decided to stand pat. You know, like, yeah, you didn't want to do a Sergei Bobrovsky comes in when you already have Spencer Knight or you're about to draft him deal. But could they have done something more short term? And, you know, that's the thing I find interesting is like the Kevin Adams situation where he went from he gets hired and everybody rolls their eyes and goes, this is the Pegula's hiring a yes man. He's the only guy who'll work for them. He's not even a front office guy. He's coming over from ticket sale or whatever. And then you watch him work for the first year or two and you go, oh, crap, this guy knows what he's doing. He's doing a pretty good job. Handled the Jack Eichel situation, all of that. And now, though, I feel like the temperature's got to be getting turned up on him because he made the call. Like, that was the defining call of the offseason. We're not going to do anything with goaltending. And it has backfired. Not that the goaltending's been awful, but it hasn't been good. It certainly hasn't been good enough to make up for all the other issues.
Yeah, I think that I think it's fair to say it's been below average. And I think if you told anybody at the beginning of the year, yeah, it didn't really work out as well as anybody hoped with Levi, everyone would go, well, then surely their goaltending is below average because Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, who's having a good season, honestly, and Erik Komri are, you know, not guys that you're counting on long term. Let's put it that way. So, I don't know. To me, I cannot be surprised that the Sabres are kind of in hell, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But part of it, too, is they play in one of the best divisions in hockey. And it's the same problem the Senators have where it's like, and even Detroit, where it's like, okay, but like, yeah, okay, maybe you can be around the playoffs. Maybe you can even make it. Maybe you're just shooting to play competitive games in March and April. But are you going to be better than three of Toronto, Tampa, Boston, or any one of the three of Toronto, Tampa, Boston, and Florida?
Hmm?
It's that same old story. I don't know. I don't know what else people expected, honestly.
It's the same thing with Buffalo. I mean, this is the question I've been asking for the Canadiens for the last long time now. Yes, it's a rebuild. Yes, they've got young players. Yes, it's good. What's the ceiling? Because when there's a point where you exit a rebuild And maybe Buffalo's not quite there yet because they're going to get another high pick this year. But there's a point where you exit a rebuild and you say, okay, we've now collected as many prime assets as we're going to get. What's the ceiling? And is that ceiling a championship contender, or is that ceiling we can get back in the playoffs? Because that's, I look at Montreal and I see a team whose ceiling is 95-point playoff bubble team, but not necessarily more than that. Buffalo, I think you can make the argument with Dahlin, with Power, with, you know, some of the other pieces that it's higher than that. But how high, and how do you get there?
Yeah, impossible to argue otherwise to me. It's a bummer because that was such a fun team last year, and you want to see fun teams succeed.
Yep,
I think
fun team, great fans again. Putting on, well, I'm not keeping on my Leaf Homer hat. I love it when they go into Buffalo and there's like both teams are good and it's a rivalry and everything. Dude,
hasn't happened in 40 years, unfortunately.
Hasn't happened in a while. But yeah. Man, it's a great, but like, you got, if you're not rooting for Sabres fans, then I don't know who you're at this point. Like, nobody can hold a candle to these guys. I mean, Jesus. But what happens if it doesn't work with this group? You're going to do another rebuild? Has a team ever gone through like three distinct rebuilds without even getting to the playoffs? I don't know, man.
Probably not in this sport. Probably in other sports, the answer is yeah, of course. True. You know, like, you know, the Kansas City Royals or somebody like that. Just like a team that was a perennial loser for as long as I can remember. And then one year was just like, we won the World Series. Oh, yep. That's weird. Are you sure about that? And they're like, oh, yeah, here's a trophy. It says Kansas City Royals right on there. Okay, well, good for you guys. Yeah, it's tough for the Sabres. I think, again, they're like the Penguins where it's like, I don't know what they're going to do. I'm fascinated by it.
I'd still damn sure rather be the Sabres than the Penguins.
Yeah, at least they got road ahead of them, you know.
Yeah, maybe, and we should point out, you maybe tell me you're the prospect guy. Like, do we still see Levy as a top goaltending prospect, or has this year, like, I mean, you know, the fact that he didn't do it this year at 21 or whatever, does that concern us?
Well. First of all, I should push back. I don't think of myself as a prospect guy. I think of myself as a college hockey knower, but I don't think of myself as a prospect guy because I just, like, there's such a certain connotation with that I don't feel applies to me, if that makes sense.
What's the connotation?
The connotation is that, like, I've seen every QMJHL game this year, and I can go, oh, the guy on
Folks,
their second pair.
He's being modest. He's seen all of them. Everyone.
It's only
like 80% in person. He does. Well, like, he gets DVDs shipped to him.
Yeah. But like, you know, I have people go like, hey, this guy, my team drafted, he's on the second line for like Notre Dame. What do you think of him? It's like, I've seen Notre Dame play like three times this year on TV. I've never seen them in person. I don't fucking know. You're like, your guess isn't. From looking at, like, you know, he's got 9 goals and 14 assists this year. Your evaluation of him isn't going to be much stronger than less strong than mine. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. And certainly, like, I couldn't tell you fucking anything about, like, I don't know what the OHL standings look like. I don't know who their leading scorers are. This is stuff I start looking at in the lead up to the draft. You know what I mean? So. It's got that's all got nothing to do with me. But with Devon Levi, let me say this. I think if you're willing to give up on a 21-year-old goalie, that's crazy. I think that his performance in college behind a not very good team over 2 seasons, he's the only goalie to ever be the National Goalie of the Year 2 years in a row, or 2 years period. And this is an award that's only like 15 years old, like, maybe not even. Connor Hellebuck won the first one. So however old you think he is, you know, like, mm-hmm. And so, like, the issue with Levi was always, he's what you would call Jussi Saros sized. He's not a big goalie. And so does that portend bad things for him in terms of becoming the guy in Buffalo? I don't know. As a general rule, goalies aren't short. He's not short. He's like 5'11", you know. Yeah. But as a general rule, goalies are big now, and he's not big. He's hockey player sized, right? And so those guys just don't make it as much as they used to. And does that apply to Devon Levi? I think there's a very distinct possibility that that's the case, but that was always the case. So I'm not giving up on him yet by any stretch of the imagination. I think it would be kind of foolish to do that because he's 21 years old. Almost no one goes straight from college to NHL starter. And that was kind of what they asked him to do. And he couldn't do it. And I don't think that's like an unforgivable sin. You know what I mean? It could go either way, I guess, is my big bold take on Devon Levi.
Fair.
But yeah. Anyway, speaking of goaltenders, we do have yet another Calgary trade update.
Yeah. Did you see the big breaking Morgan Riley news? In-person hearing is no longer an in-person hearing. They have scrapped the in-person hearing because of the snowstorm in New York.
Okay. All right, I was going to say.
Wouldn't that have been great?
Oh, by the way, so we were supposed to get socked with this snowstorm too. On Sunday, I think the forecast was 7 to 13 inches. And I'm looking at the bean pot going like, am I going to have to like fucking leave early to not get snowed in on the Mass Pike, whatever? And then when I was leaving, it was like, we're revising that down to 2 inches. And I was like, I guess I'm not. And then during the game, I got another update that it was going to be a dusting. Oh. And I was like, well, I'll just stay in Boston then. I don't care. I'm not afraid, you know. And now I'm looking out my window. We got about 3 inches. So who knows? And it's still snowing. But yeah, very funny. Anyway, yeah, the Calgary Flames, the report. Again, over the weekend from Elliot was that they had some pretty serious discussions with New Jersey about Jacob Markstrom. And yeah. That's interesting.
That is very interesting. And his report was that the discussions obviously did not lead to a deal and that it sounds like they've backed off of them now.
Yeah.
But that's a very, very interesting name in play. And it's one that makes some amount of sense. I would argue for, you know, certainly for New Jersey, but yeah, I don't think that at least considering a move with Jacob Markstrom, like you can see where the Flames are thinking there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's, you know, maybe not like something where it's like you gotta trade Jacob Markstrom this year. Like it is with in my opinion, Noah Hanif and Chris Tanev, basically any pending UFA. Because Markstrom has multiple years left, and he's playing, once again, like a Vezina-caliber goaltender. But, and I think we've said this before, what are the odds you're ever going to see Vezina-caliber goaltending from Jacob Markstrom again? You know, this could be it. And if it's not it, okay.
It's not like he's come out of nowhere to have a fluke season. This is a guy.
No. But given his age and what the Calgary Flames look like, you know, that to me is a different discussion. That's all.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, to me, I'm just like, I'm fascinated that they seem to be entertaining the idea, you know, because they don't often do a full teardown. And if you're trading Markstrom and Tanev and Hanifin or some combination of those three players, that to me signals we're kind of going teardown mode on this one.
Yeah. Or at least that you're considering it. And I always say, like, GM should be open to, you know, pick up the phone. New Jersey calls and says, Markstrom's the guy we want. Listen. I literally
don't think anyone should be untouchable. If someone calls Edmonton and says, like, here's our offer for Connor McDavid, they shouldn't slam the phone down. They'd be like, you better knock my fucking socks off with this. Don't waste my time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if someone's like, we'll give you our next 50 first round picks, I don't know, you know. I think at some point there's a scale tipping that makes it worth your while to at least consider that kind of thing.
Yeah. So apparently according to Elliot, the issue was not just the return package, but salary retention.
Which Calgary never wants to do, basically.
Which to me, I mean, salary retention and the return package are inextricably tied together.
Of course.
The more salary you retain, the more you're going to ask. I will say that if Calgary is trying to treat it as some sort of team policy not to do salary retention, then that's a big mistake, because salary retention is something that is available to teams, and yeah, you should absolutely be paid for it. Like, if I'm going to retain salary on a guy with years left on his contract, I expect that to be reflected significantly in the compensation I get back. But to say you're not going to do it at all, I don't know. Apparently, they've done it exactly once, which was Dave Riddich a few years ago, where it was a rental and it was cheap. So, I mean, be open to it. But yeah, it sounds like Craig Conroy is considering things, and that's what he should be doing. So, yep,
totally. That's all. We've just talked a lot about the Flames and their plans the last few weeks. I just wanted to make sure we mentioned that. Another thing I want to make sure we mention, I love this. Alex Ovechkin has goals in 5 straight games.
He's back, baby.
Let's fucking go, man. This is what it's all about. This is, you know, I think the goal he had on Saturday night, which pushed him to 4 straight, if I'm not much mistaken, I believe that pushed him within 60. So now he's at 59, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
I love it.
Yep.
It still feels very difficult to pull off, but he also feels like a guy where, apparently, he can just have a week where he's like, oh, I scored 5 goals this week, no problem. Mm-hmm. What are we talking about? Not a big deal.
And he hadn't looked like that guy all year, and this is the
I would
thing.
Argue, like, he still doesn't look like that guy, but okay.
But you know? Like we said, you could be rooting for him to break the record or rooting for him not to break the record, but what nobody wanted was 5 years of Alexander Ovechkin scoring 15 goals a year and just crawling as a shell of himself towards, for no reason other than to get to a record. So it was kind of looking like it was going in that direction. For a week, at least, we get to think otherwise.
I just wanted to shout that out because I think it is cool. The other thing about the Caps this week, I don't know if people saw this. It feels like it went kind of underreported just because of the whole fucking Morgan Riley thing. But it looks like this arena deal that everyone was very mad about, you don't have to worry about it. It's dead. And the reason why, apparently, is this was a deal made with lawmakers who did not get reelected. And so the new lawmakers came in and were like, we're not fucking doing this. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Get a life, man. So, yeah, that's looks like they're staying in Washington, D.C. for the foreseeable future, which is good, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have a strong feeling one way or another on where exactly they're located, but I know there was some pushback on the idea of the move. And also, it just felt like, you know, hey, thanks for the support over the decades. We're now going to go cash in some rich neighborhood
That's right, yeah.
Not, you know, kind of vaguely adjacent, but not really the same. So, I mean, if the... My understanding of this is that somewhere a billionaire is sad, so I'm good.
we can all give that one a big thumbs up. Yeah. I think the plan, you know, it would be kind of comparable to, you know, the Senators continuing to stay in their current location, you know, where it's like, yeah, I mean, it's Ottawa-ish. Is it Ottawa? No, not really. Yeah. You know, it's Washington-ish. Is my understanding. I don't know the geography down there, but, you know, you would have had to take a 40-minute train ride, it sounds like. I don't think fans should have to do that, my opinion.
Nope.
So, yep, that is that news. And I don't know. I guess we can, you know, barring any more pressing Morgan Riley weather updates, I guess, we can
apparently
we can move
he's
on.
Wearing a charcoal gray suit. And wow. The his Zoom background is slightly blurred.
Oh, he and did the Brendan, blur. Brendan he's Shanahan. Where he's broadcasting from.
Brendan Shanahan has accidentally turned on a filter that makes him look like a cat, and he can't turn it off. So George Parros is laughing at him. And
I think that's fun, though. Yeah. You know, look, for as high stakes as this feels, you got to have fun out there, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway,
they're all using a filter that makes them look like Columbus Blue Jackets, and Peros has apologized for even wasting their time.
I'm glad you mentioned the Blue
$500
Jackets.
$500 fine.
I'm glad you mentioned the Blue Jackets, Sean.
It's a segue, folks.
I forgot about this. I didn't put this on the outline. I read the funniest article in the world this weekend.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Did you see me passing this around on the Discord?
I don't think I did.
Okay. I got to scroll up a little bit to find it. But basically, Frank Saravalli reported last week that, like, the league-wide view of this Columbus Blue Jackets, like, leadership group is dim.
All right.
And apparently it was such a scathing indictment in this report that it prompted John Davidson to go on the radio and be like, here's what you got to understand about us, the beautiful Columbus Blue Jackets.
Right.
And it was rough, apparently, you know. And so a guy who has covered the Blue Jackets for a very long time in Columbus wrote an article being like, here's what people outside Columbus just don't understand about the freaking Blue Jackets, okay? And let me see if I can pull up. Well, anyway, I can't really get – there's one of those things like, looks like you're using an ad blocker and all that kind of stuff, which I am, of course.
You're like, yes, I absolutely am.
Yeah, because if I didn't, there'd be 14 autoplay videos blaring in my ear right now. Mm-hmm. But I will just quote for you the pertinent part of the article that was – I was having a good laugh to myself on a Sunday morning. They're talking about it's not as bad as it looks. It's just not as bad as it looks, okay? And this is the article. They also had an early winless streaks of 4 games, 0-2-2, and 9 games, 0-7-2, that were separated by 1 win. And this is where I will step in and say, so it sounds like they lost 13 of 14.
Yeah.
Plummeting the Jackets from playoff contention early with a 1-9-4 record between October 24th and November 19th. My opinion, you don't want to go 14 games with 1 win.
Okay.
During that stretch, the Jackets lost 4 games they led in the third period and 3 others in the third. I think that might be a typo. Outside of those skids, their record is 16-15-6 for a 5-14 points percentage. That's not lighting the league on fire, but it's a signal that Columbus and its young roster, led by a first-time NHL head coach, is figuring some things out. Do you think that's what that means? A 5-14 wins percentage, where do you think that gets them in the standings?
If you take a team's 2 worst stretches out of their record and they're still just 5-14, like I'm just looking at it now. You know, the San Jose Sharks, if you take out the 2 losing streaks they had,
mm-hmm.
of 10 games and 12 games. They are, 11 games. They are 14-10-4. That's a good
Pretty
record.
Good.
That's a hell of a lot better than 5-14. As long as you take out the 2 massive losing streaks that they had.
5-14 in the Eastern Conference, right? This year. Yeah. Gets you to 7th place in the wild card race.
By the way, I can't tell you how great I have been looking this up, and I can't tell you how grateful I am. It turns out that this article you're referencing is from the Columbus Dispatch, and it's not.
Yes.
It's not my buddy Portsline.
No, I would have. I mean, I still would have brought it up and yeah. made fun of it, but sure. I would have said it is in The Athletic, and Sean would. There would have been the sound of a spinning chair while Sean went about some other business. But yeah, it was very funny because other parts of the article were like, how they're developing David Yurecek is normal, actually. And it's like, well, hold on. He's complaining about it. It doesn't seem like that could be true.
Uh-huh.
It was a good article. I encourage people to seek it out. Because it's the Columbus Blue Jackets, man. I don't, like you said, if you take out the 14 games we lost in a row, basically, we're actually pretty fucking
we're
good. And then you look
500.
Up. And then you look up, it's like, no, if you played at that pace all year, you would be like fucking 14th at the East or something. Big salute to the Columbus Blue Jackets. They're getting it done out there.
Wow.
And finally, one thing I want to talk about. So I'm on NHL.com yesterday. And they're saying, hey,
has the page finished loading for you by today?
They noticed I was using an ad blocker.
Oh, okay.
They're like, hey, you know who's coming up on 1,000 games?
As long as you promise to fix it next time.
That's right. Continue without supporting my most clicked on link in the entire internet. They were like, hey, Alex Pietrangelo is coming up on 1,000 games. And that like pinged something in my head where I was like, yes. Hey, isn't Brad Marchand coming up on 1,000 games as well? And he is. They're both at 999 as of last night. I don't know. I didn't pay one bit of attention. Vegas played last night, so Pietrangelo's there.
They played last night and they lost.
Yes. Pietrangelo's there. Marchand's working on it.
They played last night. They lost. And they asked Pietrangelo after the game, like, what will you remember from tonight? Because they did the ceremony. They did everything. And
sure.
He says, all I will remember is that we lost.
I mean, it's to the wild.
Man,
that is pretty memorable this year.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
Well, all I remember is that, and then he continued, to the wild, a garbage organization run by garbage people. And yes, I'm referring directly to Marc-Andre Fleury, and then he
So I was like, that's interesting. It seems like there have been, including Marc-Andre Fleury, multiple guys who reached 1,000 games this year, and I looked it up. I believe him and Marchand, and the Bruins play tonight, if I'm not much mistaken. So Marchand's hitting 1,000 tonight against the Lightning at 7 p.m. I won't be able to watch it. It's on Nesson. And I was like, that feels like a lot of guys are hitting 1,000 games so far this year, if you include Marchand and Pietrangelo. We're up to 9 guys that have hit 1,000 games so far this season.
It's too many.
It's, well, here's
game
the thing.
Game is too easy these days.
Here's the thing. There are another, I believe, 6 or 5 who are on pace to break it this season. If you can believe that.
Used to mean something. Back in the days when there were 20 games in a season.
And 20 teams, yeah.
Yeah.
You know. But it's interesting that 15 guys will be reaching that milestone this year. It's interesting to me. Maybe it's not interesting to other people, but it's certainly interesting to me. A guy who likes to play a little trivia game called 20 Questions in honor of when Phil Kessel played his 1,000th game. And now we are up to... By the time this season ends, there will be, I believe, 388 players, barring injury and that kind of thing, who have played 1,000 games in the NHL. And I don't know. I say we just play a couple of quick rounds of 20 questions where we ask yes or no questions about guys who have played 1,000 games in their careers.
That's right. And I believe, right. Are we not – we're doing – a bit of a twist here in that you're going to play rather than being just the quiz master.
Yeah, I wanted to get in on the fun.
Right.
I wanted to get in on the fun. And let's Let me pull up a random number generator. We'll play this the classic way where Sean has to go first.
All right.
Okay, let me scroll up here.
So help me if you pick Claude Giroux.
Let me just see if that guy has been taken. He has not. Okay, that's great news for me, a guy who doesn't have to click random number generator once again. And you may now ask me a yes or no question about this player who played at least 1,000 games in the NHL.
Okay. Is he Canadian?
He is.
Did he play in the 1990s?
He did not.
Did he play in the 2010s?
He did not.
Did he play in the 70s?
He did.
Did he play in the 80s?
He did.
Okay. All right. Ever a Hart Trophy finalist?
Finalist. Let me...
Top three.
Really narrow it down here. It doesn't look like it.
Okay. Was he a forward?
He was.
Wow.
And that was your seventh question, by the way.
That was number seven. Okay. Was he a winger?
Yes.
Did he score 400 goals?
No.
So he stunk. How do you not score 400 goals in 1,000 games in the 70s and 80s?
It's a really good question.
Yeah. All right. Was he ever a... Did he ever play in an all-star game? That should be in
there. I'm going to have to scroll down for a second to answer that. Yes, he did.
That's
10, by the way. That was your 10th question.
Yes. Did he win a Stanley Cup?
Did he win a Stanley Cup? He did. Yeah.
All right. Boy, I got to start hitting some teams now. Did he... did he play for the Leafs?
No.
Did he play for Montreal Canadiens?
He did.
Did he play for more than two teams?
No.
Did he play for more than one team?
No.
Okay. So he's only a Montreal Canadian. Who did not score 400 goals, played 1,000, was not a Hart, but did make an all-star. Did they... have to invent a award for defensive forwards for him?
They sure did, yeah.
Okay. Is it Bob Gainey?
It is. Got it on 16.
You know what? Gainey always throws me off. I always think that Gainey played for other teams. I always picture him playing for the Stars.
That's interesting.
Which he managed and coached.
Yes.
But never played for. And I think between it's the coaching and me getting him mixed up with Guy Carboneau. The other Montreal Canadian who shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame.
You just were like, yeah, he must have Reg Dunlop that Stars team at one point, right?
Yeah, you would think. Get on in there. All right.
Player coach. Yeah. Do you want to do one more? No, why don't you go to me this time?
Yeah, you're stepping up here. You're going to show us all how it's done. All right. I have randomly, picked a player because
I asked Sean, like, don't make me guess a 50s guy. I'm not going to know who the fuck it is. You know, like, you got to cut me a little bit of slack. I'm dumb, you know?
So I have called up this guy's hockey reference page. I have no idea if we have used him before or not, but
okay,
it won't matter.
No, it really will not.
You can fire away with your 20 questions.
Canadian.
Yes.
Okay. Active player?
Yes.
Okay. Primarily known for Eastern or Western Eastern Conference,
Primarily?
Yeah.
Known. I would say no.
No, okay.
And I'm not saying that particularly authoritatively.
Okay.
Which you can read into as you wish.
Played for more than one team, then, it sounds like?
Yes.
Forward?
Yes. That's okay. Five questions.
A forward, mostly Western Conference, Canadian. I'm going to... It's the mostly thing that's throwing me off. Okay. Did he ever win a major award?
No.
Okay. That's interesting. Was he Canadian forward, Western Conference mostly? Pacific Division?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. Are you asking Pacific Division as far as what team he's associated with or yes. What team he's on? Okay. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Is he currently in the Eastern Conference?
He's currently in the Eastern Conference.
Okay. Let me think about this. Played 1,000 games. Active player. Currently in the East. Mostly known for being in the West.
I would say his most famous, his best known run came with a Western
team. That was kind of the question earlier for sure. Okay, let me think about this. And mostly known for the Pacific, you said.
Yes.
And he's currently in the
Western Conference team I was referring to was.
Yeah, right.
Not so easy.
No, it isn't. It really isn't. Is this a guy that you think I would say he's bad now?
Yes.
Okay, that actually does narrow it down. Is this a player who has won a Stanley Cup?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe that was number 10.
Okay. Is this player, we know he's in the Eastern Conference now, is he in the Metropolitan Division?
Yes.
I'm going to make a guess here that it's right. Jeff Carter.
You got it.
Wow.
Nailed it. Nicely done.
Yep.
So he played for four teams, three of which were in the East, including his current team and the team that drafted
Flyers,
him.
Flyers, Blue Jackets, the Kings, and the
But
Penguins,
I do think the Kings would be his most...
Undoubtedly.
I think Absolutely. You could argue Philadelphia. I think you could make a reasonable argument for that. But I don't think I steered you wrong.
He won two cups in L.A., I think. And those were the best years of his career. You want to do one more?
Sure.
Just for fun?
Why not?
Why freaking not? Okay, let me, where'd that random number generator go? 50. Okay, all right. I shouldn't have said that. Okay, this is a guy who I'm not sure I've ever heard of him.
Awesome.
But let's you know, that's a free clue for you.
Yeah,
you know?
I'll take it.
Anytime you're ready, fire away.
Okay, Canadian.
Yep.
Forward?
Yes.
Winger?
Yes.
Did he play in the 80s?
No.
Did he play in the 60s?
Yes.
Crap. Did he play in the 70s?
Yep.
Okay. Ooh, boy. Did he... is he in the Hall of Fame?
No.
Did he play for more than two teams?
Yep.
Did he play for more than three teams?
Yep.
Oh, no. okay.
I already lost kind of how many questions.
Nine. That is nine, according to
that's the, nine. Okay,
the
great
list that I am making here.
Okay.
All right. Well, did he play for the Leafs?
Yes.
Okay. Did he play for the Canadiens?
No.
Did he was he nah, that wouldn't really help me. Okay. Played in the '60s and the '70s, he's a did he score 400 goals?
Did he score 400 goals? He did not.
Did he ever play in an All-Star game?
Gonna scroll down here. As you know, he did.
He did. Okay. Played in the 60s and 70s, not into the 80s. So, did he play for one of the 67 expansion teams?
Yes. And I think this next question will be your 15th. One, two,
three. Yes, it is. Oh boy, I'm struggling here. Did he play for? Did he play for any of the Did he play for any teams that no longer exist? As far as like in where they were. So, for example, I would count the Colorado Rockies as no longer existing, even though they became the Devils.
Got it. Doesn't look like he did. Okay. All these teams remain in place.
Okay. Boy, this is a tough one. Did he ever have a season of more than 200 penalty minutes?
More than 200 penalty minutes. Let me click on this. No.
So he was a coward.
Mm-hmm. That's right. One of these soft Leafs you're always talking.
Yeah, exactly. Man, this is that did he get to? Okay, was he ever a finalist for a major award? Not counting the Lady Bing, because
no.
That's not a major award. No.
Next question will be your 18th.
So we've established that he's a Canadian winger who's not very good, who played before I was born, did play for the Leafs.
That's always the concern. You're just going to be like, oh.
Yeah. And if it was if he played in the 80s, I probably would have grabbed
that.
Yeah,
that's probably true. But he didn't.
Okay, I do have a couple of guys in mind. He played, I think we said he did play in an All-Star game.
He did indeed, yeah.
Okay. Does he have a son who played in the NHL?
It does not look like that's the case.
The fact that you even, I was thinking J.P. Parise, and the fact that you even had to think about it means I have screwed up and wasted my question. Boy. Did he play more than three full seasons with the Leafs?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
This is your last.
This is it. This is my last one.
Yeah.
I gotta throw a winger out there. Didn't play in the '80s. Can't be Tiger Williams. It can't be. Is it Bob Pulford?
No.
No. He's
wake up, Sean. I think I've got something to say to you. It's a guy named Ron Stewart.
I know who Ron Stewart
never
is,
heard of.
But
yeah, he was in the Faces.
I would have,
right?
but I would not have got that. So you know what? That's a tough one. We should have quit while we were ahead.
That is absolutely.
I'm now
going to
pull
a
guy from
one.
The 40s out, and I'm going to make you.
Teeter Kennedy, did he play in the 40s?
Darn it, you got him.
Okay. Well, anyway, why don't you hit them with the plugs? Let's get out of here.
You can find me at The Athletic. That's where all my written work is, as well as you may have seen the news. It is now official. A brand new podcast debuting tomorrow on Wednesday. And on Wednesdays going forward, featuring myself, and a new up-and-coming talent we've discovered by the name of Sean Gentile.
Where did they get the idea to put to do a podcast with Sean McIndoe and Sean Gentile? Who cracked the code on that one and deserves
no
a finder's
idea. So
fee?
I'm looking forward to working with him finally.
Yeah.
And it should be fun. We're also going to have Frank Corrado join us fairly often as well. Former Maple Leaf, as well as other teams that are less important than the Maple Leafs. And I'm looking forward to it. I don't know what it's going to be like or how it's going to work because neither one of us has done any prep work whatsoever. But we'll probably exchange a few texts tomorrow morning and then off we go.
Wow, there you go. And for me, keep an eye out on EP Rinkside today because I have a story I worked extremely hard on where I talked to a bunch of college hockey coaches and people who work in, I guess, what you'd call like athletics administration and that kind of thing about this whole CHL-NCAA thing, which according to a number of coaches I talked to and then some reports that came out last night is not going to be happening anytime soon. So all that stuff about you can count on it. Here we go. It's going to happen. It's not going to happen. But I have thousands of words. Like it's a very long article. Breaking down.
I call it, an intro.
Mm-hmm. Breaking down like the why this came up and why it seems like it's dead now and what. I published basically every opinion I got and just to like try to give as full a picture as you could possibly get. My boss who read it yesterday was like, yeah, I don't think anybody could have been more in depth on this issue than you.
Very nice.
Than you are here. So, there is an element of I've been working on this for weeks and he just tweeted it out. That is for sure. But like, again, I really get into the why and how and what it all means and will it happen in the future. Basically, if you have a question about any of this, I think I answered it. And if you don't have a question about it, read it anyway, just so my boss thinks I'm a smart little boy. And other than that, yeah, I like I said, I was at the Beanpot last night. I have an article on the guys who were like the best players for their respective teams. Some of them drafted and some of them not. And some of them eligible to be drafted this spring, let's say. You know who I'm talking about. I'm working hard this week and also hardly working. So. And then patreon.com/pucksoup, all our bonus episodes and all that kind of stuff. You know what we do over there at this point. So, check it all out. Thank you for listening to this show. And we'll talk to you next week again on Tuesdays from now on.
That's right.
And, at least for the foreseeable future. Do athletic podcasts go away in the summer? I feel like they do, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So we might switch back to Wednesdays, but we might be used to Tuesdays by then. I guess, keep an eye out.
That's right.
Anyway, thanks so much, folks. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.